What's up? What's up? What's up? Today we're going. I'm in a wax test today.
No, you're not.
You're not gonna let me?
I'm not gonna let you wax me. You're gonna bruise me. We're talking today about hair.
Hair.
And water, which are two very important issues when it comes to Islam.
And cleanliness.
And cleanliness.
And sexy times.
And yeah. I guess sexy times. We'll see if we get into the sexy times.
We have a hot episode for you. We're going to talk about sexy times. We're going to talk about what you're supposed to do with your hair. What's haram to do with your hair. What's halal to do with your hair. And it sounds weird to say that because it makes me feel like I'm going to eat it. And that's gross because it's hair. Tess, what's going on with you?
I don't know. We got back from South by Southwest, and I feel like I've been on the go since I've been here. We had a conference down here in Los Angeles with Advancing Justice Conference, where all my Asian American activists came out, and I was hanging out with them. And then AWP was in town, which is this writers' conference. All my writer friends were in town, so it's just been nonstop, and I feel kind of like super ramped up. What about you?
Well, we're in your apartment right now.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited to see you.
Aw, I'm excited to see you too in my apartment.
Yeah, and like not on a screen somewhere.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we're recording without an audience for a little while.
Yeah, usually we have a producer and now we get to run free.
So in my mind, there's like a fire going right now.
I'm in the Koreatown apartment complex. There's no fireplace here.
Just me and you with a velvet armchair. Seated.
Smoking jacket. What is a smoking jacket? I've always wondered about this.
Because you smoke and then all the smoke gathers around you and sits on your jacket and you smell like smoke.
Can I have a smoking jacket even though I don't smoke? Because they look really fashionable.
Well, wouldn't they smell bad?
But you get one and then dry clean it first and then... Anyways.
I will make you a smoking jacket, Taz.
Are you going to crochet me a smoking jacket?
I'm going to crochet you a smoking... It's going to take me 3 years, but I'm going
to
do it.
I'm looking forward to it.
You know what I'm looking forward to?
What?
Our segments.
All right. What's
what's coming up? We're going to talk about big topics.
So there was another attack that happened.
No, get out. With a Muslim?
I know, right? Go figure.
What?
This was, I mean, there were so many of them, but this was the Belgium attack that was happening.
It's almost like there's a genocidal militia somewhere in the Middle East that has been active for years that everyone has been ignoring while it was killing Muslims, but now it's killing white people.
Yeah, and that's apparently news.
Is that what's happening?
Yes. The thing that really bothered me, though, about the Belgium attack is right around the time that the Belgium attack happened, there's all these other attacks that also happened. So there's one in Lahore. There was one in, I think, Iraq. There was one in...
Many. All around the Middle East. Well, they've been committing genocide against the Yazidi people.
Yeah, no, but I think there was, like, attacks that happened immediately around the time of the Belgium attacks.
Oh.
Not just the Yazidi, like, not the perpetual genocide.
I see.
So there was all these, like, immediate attacks, but the only ones that got international play were the ones coming out of Belgium because white people.
Well, we don't want to kill white people.
Or when we do kill white people, it gets put in the news. And when other people of color get killed, that's not newsworthy.
Right.
So you had an article that you wanted to share.
So there's this article in the New York Times that is about the Belgium attack and one of the Belgium attackers. And it paints this portrait of him as like dangerously normal, which is this depiction of terrorists and also Muslims. That makes it so that people like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz can say things like, we need to monitor them in their neighborhoods. So the phrase was first coined by Lowe's department store in defense of why they pulled their advertising from the reality TV show All American Muslim on TLC. They said, because it paints a portrait of Muslims as being dangerously normal, quote
Which
unquote.
Is so stupid because Muslims are normal. There just happens to be a couple that are dangerous within the Muslim community.
It's not even the Muslim community. That's the other thing that drives me insane, right? So, okay, let me first read the nut graph of this article. It says, he attended Catholic school and studied electrical engineering. His immigrant family valued education and discipline. His brother carries the Belgian flag as a national martial arts champion.
So why does this bother you?
Well, it basically opens with dun, 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 dun. It doesn't matter how much they embrace the national identity. They will never be white and they will always hate you, mm-hmm. white people. Mm-hmm. Right? He looks and sounds just like you, just like your kids, just like your neighborhood. And it's like, you know, scare tactic.
Yeah, right? It is a scare tactic that feeds what Trump and Cruz are saying. That,
exactly.
That because Muslims are just every day, that they will all be everyday terrorists.
Right. And I'm going to read this paragraph and you tell me if it sounds familiar to you or if it reminds you of something. Here's the quote. One former university acquaintance posted on Facebook a photograph of Mr. Lashrui with seven other students in his electrical engineering class who had built a radio together. Mr. Lashrui is dressed in Western clothes and stands in the back row, a sober look on his face.
Western clothes.
And a kid building a radio.
Oh my goodness.
Remind you of the scare with a little boy and a clock? I mean, this is basically legitimizing xenophobic fears of Muslims using this article. And it's so frustrating because if you read the article, there's also another story being told of an antisocial kid that sounds at risk because they're in an extremely racist community. It's also a poor neighborhood from what she describes later in the article. In the beginning, it sounds like they're an affluent family, and it turns out they're not. And it's a really racist part of town, and that Belgium is very segregated. And this kid was antisocial, and he was already kind of at risk. And he disappears. He totally disappears off the earth, and they don't know what happened to him.
Oh, God, he was killed.
Well, he was recruited or kidnapped. Who knows?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We absolutely don't know. And none of that is being followed. Mm-hmm. So basically, the investigative reporting being done here is they checked his Facebook and then like also checked to see like what Muslimy things are going on, which like in terms of benefiting us as a society, it's probably a good idea to, I don't know, what does The Wire say? Follow the money. Try and like look to see like who are the people who took this guy, recruited him, follow maybe that lead. Maybe not try and spend all your time figuring out how much he hated Christmas. It's ridiculous. And this is the New York Times. And also, they're taking things from Facebook, all right? I didn't get to get away with that in college as a cite to source. Why is the New York Times doing this? And it pisses me off that this is the New York Times. You know, this is supposed to be like beacon of like how we write.
Yeah.
And good journalism, and it's not. It's shitty journalism, and I'm pissed. And, oh, here's my favorite part of the article. It says that there were some markers to look out for because he started to roll up his pants like the Salafis and grow a goatee, and it made me a little bit nervous about my chin hairs.
Oh, yeah? Why?
Well, sometimes I let them grow a little bit.
I thought you said in the last podcast that your mom and your husband don't let you out of the house without examining your chin hair first.
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes I duck out and I get annoyed and I want to rebel and grow my goatee.
And then that means you're a terrorist.
That's what I'm worried about. Am I being radicalized by my chin hairs?
Possibly. I think if the more you let them grow, the more, I don't know.
the more at risk I am of radicalization.
The more at risk you are.
Taz?
Yes.
Do you wax?
Where?
Let's start there. Well, when did you actually start? Because, okay, hair removal for brown girls. I mean, come on.
Yeah, this is a huge issue for brown girls. One of the things that I was really concerned with growing up was all the white kids were always like shaving their legs. And I didn't grow up then. I had lots of hair. I'm a South Asian woman. So I grew very shameful of hair. And then, gosh, I'm just like remembering all these like hair segments in my life.
Like what?
Well, I was thinking about like, okay, do you remember the epilates?
Yes, I had one.
Yeah, so like the epilady, there were these like vibrator sized hair removal equipment that were really hot in what, like the 90s? And so I think my mom had one. And so they would like pull your hair out. And I didn't ask my mom for permission. I just kind of like stole it one day.
Me too.
Try it out. And then like I used it on my legs and it was like super painful.
Oh my God, it hurt so bad.
It was so painful. And it was the stupidest idea ever. And all the infomercials would talk about how painless it was. And I was like, this is a lie. It's a lie.
I feel so validated right now.
You too, huh?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Totally fell for it. And my mom laughed at me.
When she found out you were taking it out?
Because it's so painful.
It's so super painful. But I think what was interesting, I think maybe this is reflective of you too, is like it was interesting because like my mom never taught me to shave my legs. I had to like sneak around and figure it out on my own. And I think that's why I like was sneaking out and like using my mom's epilady.
What did your mom say when she found out?
I don't know what she said. I think she was just kind of like, okay. I don't think that was a big issue. I don't think the epilady was as big of an issue as the razor was a big issue. Because for her, she was like, once you start shaving, you can't stop because it'll grow back thicker.
Oh, yes. The Didn't thicker.
You, the thicker
yep.
myth? Yeah.
Yep. It'll grow back thicker.
So what I want to know from you is what kind of Muslim myths did you grow up about hair removal?
The only time my mom ever called me a whore, she called me a whore, was when I was like, I think I was like 12 years old.
Did you even know what the word meant when you were 12?
Oh, yeah. Because all the girls were using it on each other. Like, we were in middle school. Yeah. Bitchin' and whore and slut and skank. And we were playing around with all those words.
What kind of a school did you go to?
A middle school.
My God.
And you didn't say skank when you were, like, in sixth grade? Come on. Really?
I probably said skank when I was, like, 15. And then I super blushed when I said it, too.
Well, actually, my mom got really embarrassed when she said that out loud.
Well, why did she call you a whore?
Well, because for her, like, my mom got married when she was 14 years old. She grew up in a village in Iran. Mm-hmm. And she grew up with the thinking that you wax your body, like your aunts and your grandma and your mom, like, wax your whole body and do your eyebrows once you are getting married on your, like, before your wedding night. And that's the only time you do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm the first kid in my family, right? So, and first generation family. So it was like a shock to her.
You're a whore.
Hence the whore.
Well, what I heard was that in Islam, you're not supposed to pluck your eyebrows at all. That it's halal to have hairy eyebrows. Like, you're supposed to keep all your hair and not have any of it plucked. Except for two places.
Where?
You're supposed to shave under your arms. What? And shave your nether regions.
Pubes.
Yeah.
Shave?
Get rid of the hair. With razor or wax or whatever.
Not even just trim.
No. And the way I learned about this, my mom didn't have this conversation with me. I was at Sunday school at my mosque. I go every Sunday. And so they split the room up into like, the guys went into one room and the girls went into another. And then we had the talk. And the talk was done by, it was a Pakistani mosque. And it was the wife that came in to talk to us, and she was wearing niqab when she was talking to us. So we were getting this like weird like body conversation from a woman that was completely covered, and she wasn't even speaking English. She was speaking in Urdu, and she had a translator, and the translator wasn't very good. And I don't speak Urdu, so I didn't understand anything that was happening, and what was coming to me was coming through this translator. And essentially what I got from it was that it's dirty and disgusting to have hair down there and under your arms. And every 40 day, you're supposed to get rid of that.
What?
Yeah. And this is like the Muslim teachings that I was raised with. And I like remember going home that day going like, what was this Sunday school lesson about? And just, I'm surprised you didn't hear this growing up.
40 days?
40 days.
So like the Jews wander the desert for 40 days and a Muslim woman grows her hair in the meantime? Is that
Yeah. Like, and then you're supposed to like get rid of it.
I just like the idea that this is all coming from the same Old Testament God that like in one Testament is like, I'm going to have the Jews wander around for 40 days.
Yeah.
And then like in the trilogy, like third episode, he's like, actually, you know what, Muslim woman, don't touch your hair for a while because you don't want ingrowns.
It's true. I remember at the time that I was really concerned. I was like, well, how do you get rid of it? Am I supposed to take a razor to my vagina area? And I don't remember. I must have done it because I was super curious.
Okay, I peeked at your Facebook thread.
Yeah.
And one of the stories on there, the girl did say that her parents told her that she should shave.
So to prepare for this conversation, I asked around all my friends about the habits that they were raised with because I think there's so much shame associated with this hair removal aspect that no one's really talked about it, which is why we wanted to talk about it in the podcast. And our friend Kidsia responded with the following message. Age 10, place, Abbottabad, Pakistan. upholder of patriarchy under the guise of religion, mom, paternal grandmother, cousin. I was basically told I'm a grown woman at age 10 and that hair is unclean and it needs to be removed and that I can't shave because I might cut myself. I was seated in a white plastic lawn chair in one of our bathrooms and given a jar of some grainy, muddy, pumice-type situation. Then I was told to rub, 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 and pull. Then repeat till it's all clean. There were many, 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 many tears, many threats to not be able to leave the bathroom till I'm done. I can't even look at white plastic lawn chairs the same way.
Wow.
I know.
At 10.
At 10. I can't imagine having like my family members around me while teaching me how to pull my crotch hair out.
Oh, my mom waxes me and so does my husband.
Do they wax your vagina?
No, actually. Good distinction. You're right. I forgot about that part. How could I forget my vagina?
Your vagina.
I actually have a lady for my vagina.
Oh, yeah?
I'm a Brazilianer. A Brazilianaire.
A Brazilianaire?
Like, surface area, man. It's like, that's, stuff's happening down there.
Uh-huh.
I am a condoner of the Brazilian. It enhances my orgasms.
Oh, interesting.
More surface area.
Right. But the hair does provide sensitivity.
My experience has been it dulls it.
Interesting.
Also, my wax lady oils my labia down afterward, and I'm really into it.
How does she oil down your labia afterwards?
She puts oil on her palms, rubs them together, and then just like goes up and down my labia like they've been through a traumatic ordeal, and she wants to like relax them.
How up does she go?
There's no hair on my G-spot, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah. I just was checking.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Just to make sure.
I wanted to know.
Unfortunately, no. But maybe I'll try that on her one time.
Be like, hey, woman, just think that there's some hair growing on
maybe
the
in
inside.
Can you just check?
Can you just check if there's any hair in there?
With your face. I wouldn't mind that. Just saying. Okay, so here's what's confusing to me. Well, first of all, we should mention your friend is Sunni, right? Because I'm Shia, and this definitely was not part of, like, taking your hair off, waxing, plucking, any of that was, like, forbidden unless you were going to get married.
Like, well, what's been interesting about having these conversations with all these people is I don't think it's necessarily a Sunni-Shia distinction. It's definitely very cultural. So there's Bangladeshi woman that responded into the thread who said that she never was taught anything. But then there's other people who are taught to remove.
I think that everybody, even more than cultural, I think it's like familial.
Yeah, totally familiar. I think it's definitely like what you were raised with. What was interesting for me growing up was how much shame there is associated with hair. And I grew up with a lot of shame about like eyebrow hair and like mustache hair. But then no one ever talks about like the shame of underarm hair, or like pubic hair, you know? And I think that was, and it was a topic that I couldn't bring up with my mom because she didn't bring it up. And I was just like, had to figure it out on my own. But I also didn't have a lot of Muslim friends when I was younger. So it was just like, I had no idea what I was doing.
I was also surprised that you had a guy friend who had his parents checking his underarm hair.
I know. So the hadith for men says that men are supposed to trim their pubic hair region and their underarm region to the length of a grain of rice. So I had a friend whose mom saw him wearing a tank top and then saw like that he had hair under his arm. So she went and talked to his dad, and his dad would have a conversation with this guy. Mind you, he didn't get the sex talk or any other puberty talk. He just got the hair talk. And then after they had that conversation, every week his dad would ask him for an underarm examination.
Inspection.
To see if he was trimming his hair. And then he was like, not checking his pubic hair region, but it was kind of like implied that if he's checking his underarm hair, that he needs to be trimming the other stuff. And I was like, what? You got a weekly inspection to make sure your hair was like trimmed under your arm? That's wild.
As a woman who goes down, I appreciate the manscaping.
Yeah, manscaping's good.
I will say I appreciate priming men to also, like, I'm not into the shame at all.
Right. Shame is terrible.
But, like, you know, is it presumptuous of me to assume that I will tell my daughters you should be a Brazilianaire because you're going to have awesome sex? Am I going to be that mom? Will I be cool like that?
No, I don't know. I don't think you should say that at all.
At all to my kid? I want her to have orgasms. I want her to have like multi-orgasms. I don't know. Maybe I don't. If you're my daughter in the future listening to this, do whatever I'm telling you in the present.
So you have a story about your husband.
My whitey white man?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a 1 minute story about this. It's on my YouTube channel. You can go check it out. The first time that I introduced my boyfriend, who is now my husband, to my parents is also the first day and only day that I waxed his chest.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you did this.
Well, because 40-year-old virgin had just come out.
You waxed his chest hair based on 40-year-old virgin? Because that scene was so painful in that movie. Like he is red and crying, and it like actually happened. You saw that and you're like, fuck this, I'm doing this to my husband. Oh, you are sadistic.
Well, he was boyfriend at that time.
Even worse.
And also, funny things came out of Steve Carell's mouth, and I wanted that to happen.
Oh my gosh, that's so terrible.
And I thought it was going to be funny. And okay, so here's the thing. I wax like a dream. And I know this because that is what my wax lady says. And also, like, my mom has been waxing herself forever. I think since she was born.
Yeah.
I think she was born, and then she just, like, also waxed her arms and was like, boom, here I am. And then she cut her own umbilical. So like waxing wasn't like a big deal. I just like one strip, boom, boom. And it didn't even hurt that bad. And that is not how it went for my husband.
Of course not.
And okay, so he was my boyfriend at this time. I was introducing him to my folks.
White
and
people are fragile. Their skin is like almost translucent.
So frail, Taz.
It's so not able to withstand the waxing.
Okay. Also, I didn't know they have like layers and layers of hair and skin.
Oh my God.
So I went over, okay, first we got into a fight. I don't even remember what it was about, but I gave him the silent treatment and we're like at my parents' house and he's like totally freaked out that I'm giving him the silent treatment and he's meeting my parents for the first time. And he was like, okay, I'll let you wax my chest.
Oh my gosh. This is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
Because my mom had this whole pro wax setup. And my parents have this like big house, right? So my mom's like preparing dinner. We're super early. And I was like, oh, hell yes. I'm never, ever again going to get this opportunity. So I started to wax his chest and he does not wax like a Persian girl. He waxes like a frail, translucent white man.
Yeah.
And so I kept going over the same spot.
Why?
Until it started bleeding.
Oh my gosh. So terrible.
Like he still has a scar from it in the shape of a rectangle.
Oh my gosh.
And I got so really terrible. Scared. So then I was like, okay, hold on. And I went and I got my mom.
Uh-huh.
And so my mom came in and sees him on the floor with her wax stuff everywhere. And he's like bleeding.
And this is his first time meeting your mom.
This is his first time meeting my mom.
Oh my gosh.
And my mom just goes into like full nurse mode.
Oh my gosh.
And he's like, no, this is weird. No. And my mom is like, you're being a baby. You're fine. You're doing great. And she just like waxed his whole chest.
Oh my gosh. How did it look afterwards?
Kind of like a boy going through puberty with like sort of getting acne on his chest.
And a big red rectangle in the middle of it.
Yeah. Scarf. And he still has that scar.
Oh my gosh.
So cut to, we have dinner and my mom had to like oil down his chest.
Your mom had to oil down his chest on the first meeting?
Yes. She oiled his whole chest with this like special Swiss oil.
Did your mom give the oil to you so you would oil his chest, or your mom literally rubbed down your now husband's chest with oil?
The latter.
You do realize how that sounds.
Okay, so then my dad came in and my dad just is like, at this point, Duncan, my husband, is like, no, this is weird. Don't come in. And my dad walks in and he just goes, this is like a weird thing that you are doing here, man.
Yeah, because it was weird.
And then my dad just leaves.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe you put him through that. I can't believe he married you after all that.
Okay, so then it gets worse. He can't put a shirt on because of the oil. And my mom is like, you have to let it cool off. It's inflamed and angry and you need to let it chill. So she gave him her purple bathrobe. So we're all eating dinner for the first time, and he's wearing my mom's purple bathrobe with his chest just looking like this, like, purple, bruised, plucked goose.
Holy moly.
And we're, like, all just, like, awkwardly trying not to stare. But it was awesome because they felt really bad for him, and then it was downhill from there.
I think that's how you bring a white man into your Persian family. Like, you have to, like, that
wax the man's chest.
And figure out a way to put him in a purple bathrobe, and your parents will all of a sudden have sympathy for him in a way that you never thought they would have had before. That's the key here. For all you Muslim women out there trying to bring home a white man, this is it. Figure out how to put them in a purple bathrobe when they first meet your parents.
Get your mom to wax his chest.
And oil him down. Avi.
Okay, so I want to hear about your Sunday school, though. Because you and I both went. You went to a Sunday school. I went to a Saturday school. Both religious.
Yeah.
And we both have, like, so many different stories that have come out of it.
Yeah, I think our raising is so different that it's been coming up in different ways. So what I found really interesting, last time I saw you, mm-hmm. which was last week, we were having a conversation about neti pot because we were both sick. Yes. And I hate neti pot. Neti pot is this pot of salt water that you put up your nose and then it comes out the other end. And you were trying to convince me that because I was starting to feel sick that I needed neti pot. I was like, hell no. That's why I could never do the nose rinsing part of voodoo, was because I would have to put water up my nose. And then you said,
wait, what?
And we realized that we have different voodoo practices.
Yeah. And also, okay, I say vuzu.
Right.
The W is V in Persian and the is the
right.
Vuzu.
And I say voodoo.
And it's totally different.
Totally different. It was such a funny conversation because I kept saying, like, well, I rinse my mouth and you're like, no. And then I said, we rinse our nose and you're like, no. And I was like, wait a second. I think we have different religions here, which is what came out of this conversation. So let's do a comparison. So when I do wudu, I start with washing my hands. Same?
But just out of, like, general cleanliness, sure, but not a part of it.
So washing your hands is not a part of wudu?
No. Like hands with soap and, like, washing your hands?
No. You rinse your right hand 3 times and then your left hand 3 times.
No.
And then we also rinse out our mouth 3 times.
Nope, definitely not.
We rinse our nose out 3 times.
Definitely not.
We wash your face.
Nope.
We rinse up to our elbow.
Yes.
Put water over your head.
Not over, but there's water on the hair.
Right, like this. I'm putting my hand over my hair.
You're putting your hand over your whole head. I had, like, a very specific, like, the magne, like you do, like, a strip down your hairline.
Oh my gosh, so you don't even do, like, your whole head. You just do a line.
And very specifically a straight line. And I think I do remember us doing the hands, actually. You do the hands 3 times, and then you do 4 fingers above the elbow, and then on each side. And then you do your, like,
a line. The whole hair.
Yeah.
Hair. And then you do your feet.
And then, but we don't wash our feet. You just do a strip. It's symbolic. What?
We wash our right feet 3 times and then left feet up to ankle.
Nope. See, my grandma would have freaked out over that.
Why would she have freaked out?
My grandma was, like, super OCD.
Yeah.
And, like, so people would be like, oh, she's very religious. And I was like, she sounds actually OCD.
So what does it mean? How did that transfer into how she practiced?
Like, she would call, like, rinsing out the nose and stuff like that, like, najis. She would say, that's dirty. We don't do that. That's for, like, you're preparing yourself maybe before you actually do the wuzu, and, like, now you want to do the wuzu, which is, like, symbolic and ritual.
Whoa. So, yeah. So, Zara and I were both stunned about it. So, my friend Sophia, she said that she learned that you wash face, wash arms up to elbows, passing water over your head, and washing feet up to the ankle 3 times each. You're doing it the sunnah way, which is fine, but it's not necessary unless you want to be like the prophet. And then I responded, the way my Arabic teacher yelled at me, that was no sunnah. That was, like, mandatory. And then she said that when her parents started sending her to a South Asian Sunday school, she also got yelled at all the time. And that everything was haram to those teachers. Which really made me think about how different our Sunday school experience was. That maybe the South Asian Sunday school had a lot of yelling and don't do things like this. And yours was...
We had no yelling.
No yelling. That's so surprising.
Mostly internalized guilt.
Oh, interesting. So
my teacher had a voice like this.
No yelling.
And everything she said with a smile, like, you're going to go to hell if you do that.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is the conclusion here? Like, after knowing that there are all these different rituals, like, religious people, we like to know what's the right one. What have we done? We've released the Pandora's box of options.
I don't know if I, like, need to know what the right one is. I think what really bothers me about this whole revelatory experience is that when I was going to Sunday school, it was so ingrained in me that there was one right way and there was, like, one set of rules to follow. And it's just kind of freeing to understand that not only are there different ways to remove hair off of your body, to wash your mouth and nose with or not when you're, you know, doing wudu or praying in different ways. I think there's something powerful in knowing that there's different ways to do these things and that there is no one right way, even though everyone's going to say, like, my way is the right way. But there is, because of the variety, like, I can't imagine that there is one right way to do this. And there's something freeing about that.
You know, my teacher prepared me for this moment, I think, because she said there are other people who do it differently and they're wrong.
But who's right? Who is right?
Well, thankfully, we've got Rumi to spell some of this out.
Oh, yeah? What does Rumi have to say about body hair?
Let's go to Rumi's comedy corner. Okay, so I found three quotes from Rumi about waxing.
Uh-huh. I didn't realize that Rumi had quotes about waxing. I thought Rumi had quotes about spirituality.
These quotes, once you hear them, you're going to be like, oh yeah, these are definitely about waxing.
Okay, let's hear it.
If you are irritated by every rub, how will you be polished? Wax that shit.
I don't think he said wax that shit.
It's in brackets. The moment you accept what troubles you've been given, the door will open. Wax that shit. What matters is how quickly you do what your soul directs. Wax that shit. Wise words from Rumi. Let's go to Election Watch.
We have seen a war on faith.
Is there a Muslim problem in the world?
Absolutely.
I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation.
So for Election Watch, I wanted to talk about this South Asian man in North Carolina that had to spell his name at the voting poll.
Racist.
Super racist. It kind of harkens back to the literary tests that were happening way back in the days when it came to the voting process. What was so ridiculous about this story was that he showed up to his polling place and the guy asked for his name. He gave the poll worker his name, but then the poll worker asked him to spell out his name. The guy had handed him his ID and he didn't even, like, look at the ID. He, like, wanted to make sure that the guy knew how to spell his own name. And then over the course of spelling his own name, the guy, like, mistyped the name and said, like, B instead of D. And he was like, no, D as in dog. So the guy couldn't even, like, understand the spelling that was being given to him. This is just such a terrible case of voter suppression and the kinds of fraud that's happening in the world when it comes to the electoral process.
And he wasn't behaving that way with any of the other people that were walking in.
Right. With all the white people that walked in, there was no spelling of names. So this man's name was Ravindra, and his last name is Rudravagala. And the guy had him spell the whole last name. And he had his wife spell her whole last name, too. So terrible. I think as we get closer to the elections and as we see more heightened racism happening in this nation, that you're going to hear microaggressions at the polling place like this keep popping up.
Especially against Muslims, I'm sure. Or anyone Muslim sounding.
Yeah, I mean, this guy was not Muslim by the looks of his name, but I think he had a long brown name, and that was enough for the poll worker to say racist shit.
Mm.
And Zara, there was, like, something else happening with the South Asian community, too. A bunch of folks were fighting.
Deported.
Deportation.
Yeah, well, okay, so Trump and Cruz keep harping on the need to ban Muslims, bar Muslims from the United States, deport Muslims from the United States, as though they are calling upon something new. This has been happening.
Yeah.
And is already an issue. According to Think Progress, it's already harder for Muslim asylum seekers to get asylum in the United States. So there's that already.
Right.
And these people who sought asylum, of course, they're running for their lives.
Yeah.
And they were deported and sent back. A lot of them probably facing death.
Yeah, this happened the second week of April, and I believe 100 folks were deported. And the organization out of New York called Drum and a bunch of other South Asian organizations are organizing around this, trying to fight it.
Yeah, and a lot of these people are escaping from their countries because there's political unrest.
Yes.
And, yeah.
So, like, in Bangladesh, there's a rash of incidences happening with Bangladeshi atheist bloggers or secular bloggers, and they're getting murdered with machetes. And it's really scary because these asylum seekers are fleeing that really scary experience. And I know that once they're back, they're fearing for their lives.
This is after the influx of the Saudis.
Yeah, there's a lot of money going into Bangladesh right now to make it a little bit more religious. And it's having terrible...
To make it more Wahhabi.
To make it more Wahhabi, yeah.
Because I consider myself as religious as it gets.
Right. What's happening in Bangladesh right now when it comes to the political tension that's going on is really ridiculous. And it's just being funded through the extreme religious right. And I think you kind of are seeing this worldwide, especially with all these attacks by ISIS/Daesh worldwide, that there's this undercurrent of, I hate saying this, but Muslim extremism going on that's really feeding ISIS's mission.
Well, I don't even think it's extremism. I think it's a Saudi campaign. And I think it's really interesting that the GOP is really backing the Saudis up against the Iranians.
Totally.
Kind of funny that in Election Watch, we're seeing the GOP really rallying for the Wahhabis. Curious about that.
Are we, though? Are we curious or do we? Is it all just like all laid out?
For this Persian, it's definitely all laid out.
Right.
All right. It's time to look at creeping Sharia and all the ways we're winning.
Zara, you're so excited about your creeping Sharia. I think it's because she has the same name as you, kind of.
It does start with a Z.
It does start with a Z.
Also, she's so happy.
Who is she?
Okay, she's pink.
Yeah.
Kind of purplish.
Uh-huh.
And she's got multicolored yarn hair.
Oh my gosh, you're so into yarn right now.
And she lives on Sesame Street.
Oh my gosh. I grew up watching Sesame Street. That was the show that I watched when I was little and how I learned how to assimilate into American culture.
Zari. Uh-huh. Is it Zari or Zaddy? I don't know how they're going to say it. They haven't said her name yet.
Well, what was interesting was that she has an accent. So who is this Zari?
She's 6 years old. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she wears hijab. I noticed that. I haven't seen the episode yet. I've just seen the launch of Zari, Zaddy. She has an accent. She's Afghani. And
she's so cute.
And she hugs Elmo.
So adorable. I'm so excited about this. I think my life would have been completely different if I knew that there was a puppet that was Muslim on Sesame Street.
And I think if I had a puppet that had an accent like my parents, that also dressed kind of like my parents.
Yeah.
That would have meant a lot to me.
Why?
Because it wouldn't have been as foreign. Hmm. And I wouldn't have felt as different and weird as the other kids would say.
Yeah, I was kind of actually having a problem with the accent because I think there's something othering about making the Muslim character have an accent. But I kind of understand what you're saying. Maybe the 6-year-old version of me would have wanted to see an accent on Sesame Street because I would have also only had an experience with my parents being the ones with accent. And that would have kind of normalized them in a certain way, which I never really thought about.
I also think that it's important for kids to grow up hearing English accented.
Oh, interesting. Why do you think that?
Because, like you said, it normalizes it. Mm-hmm. And I think also they'll get better at, you know, listening. Their listening skills will improve.
Yeah.
They're hearing English coming at them from a variety of ways.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It recenters how we hear English and how the language is being told at us.
Totally.
I also have something. My creeping Sharia is also about recentering. Recentering Zayn Malik into my life. I know, he's really young, but he's super cute. And I was driving through LA, and because Zayn Malik has an album coming up, it's his first solo album. And his album cover is a picture of a young Zayn Malik with all these tattoos on his hand. And he's this really cute, like, brown baby. And in LA, they plaster these images all over the place whenever there's some sort of promotion for an album or something. I was driving, I was just like, oh my gosh, there's an image of a brown baby with tattoos all over LA. This is the ultimate creeping Sharia.
Bam.
Bam. Like, it's super subliminal to, I don't know.
Well, creeping Sharia is subliminal.
Yeah, I mean, creeping Sharia is subliminal. But I think what was so great about just seeing this brown face everywhere was just how when I was growing up, I never saw brown faces in media or on billboards or anywhere. And now there's this brown face of this really cute, adorable little baby. And I kind of love that, you know, being the punker that I am and loving tattoos. Like, I love that this image of this brown baby also had tattoos. And it was just, I mean, obviously it was fake tattoos on this baby. But just that imagery was just super moving for me. And I don't know. It kind of made me want a brown baby so that they could be this world and see this baby face on the walls.
Okay, Taz's kid in the future. Tattoos?
Obviously.
This will be really funny if, like, it turns out not that way.
Oh, my gosh. Just, yeah, I'm going to have whatever kid I have is going to be, like, the most Republican, boring accountant ever.
Oh, no.
I already know it.
Do you think Zane keeps his pubes the length of a race?
Let's pause for a minute and think about Zayn Malik's pubes. Climb on board.
We'll go slow and high tempo. Wax that shit. I bet he has really trim underarms.
Okay, so about the underarms. When you see a guy with trim underarms, do you think it's attractive or not?
Okay, well, first of all, I would not know that they were trimmed. Mm. Because whenever I think of a guy's underarms, it's just like a patch of hair. It's like a web, like a cobweb of hair.
What kind of webs of hair are you seeing?
It's just like a puff. Like, it's not even like, it's not even defined.
Okay.
Oh, boy. I'm getting the hand.
Okay, so when you mean web of hair, how long are you saying on the underarm of, like, men that you've been with?
Well, that's what I'm saying is I can't tell the length.
What do you mean?
It's just, like, matted and, like, you know, it's under your arms, like... Definitely, it's not attractive to me when it's, like, hanging and it's, like, long.
So when you say long, how long is too long?
I haven't thought about this.
Because when you're lying down with a man and your head is in the nook of his neck and shoulder, then, you know, there's hair there. So how much is, like, too much hair there?
I'm already getting turned on. Let's see. Too much, I guess, if I'm choking on it.
Why would you be choking on underarm hair?
Well, don't you, like, after sex, always put your face in his armpit?
Not in his armpit. Like, who puts anyone's face in anyone's armpit?
Doesn't everybody do that? Like, you lick it, like, right afterwards to get the pheromones into your system? Wait, do you also do your wudu differently? Because I think maybe this is also maybe like a religious difference.
Maybe. It probably is.
All Persian women stick their face in a man's armpit, lick his armpit hair to get the pheromones into their bloodstream, and then have their babies.
Anyways, Zayn Malik. We'll go slow and high tempo,
light and dark. Okay, Taz, I saw this amazing play. It was by Jonas Hassan Kamiri. He's a Swedish playwright, Opie Award-winning playwright, and director Evren Ötzikin, who also is Muslim. I didn't know that. And the play is called I Call My Brothers.
Yeah.
And this is the first play I've seen where, okay, first of all, they only mention the word Muslim, I think, like, once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
Everything else they allude to.
Right.
And the entire play is framed around the gaze of people and their perceptions of Muslims and exploring that perception. And going in it, I really was like, how is this going to work?
Yeah.
And it totally works. And it was fantastic. And my Good Muslim Award goes to the director and the playwright and the actors putting together this play, which is at the Thick House, put together by Crowded Fire Theater. You should go see it. It's in San Francisco.
Well, next time I'm in town, I will go. And this leads into your awkward ask a Muslim, right? What happened in the audience?
Okay, so we're doing the fireside chat, and there was a white lady. And why do we have to tell white people good job all the time?
I don't know. I'm not really good at it. I need to learn.
But, like, I feel like white lady is, like, specific to this type of white lady.
Right. It's like the white lady that goes to theater.
Right.
The white lady in San Francisco that goes to theater.
Who, when there's time for one question.
Right.
Decides to pipe in with a comment.
Well, I don't understand why she didn't raise her hand.
Because she doesn't need to.
Oh, right. White people.
Forget that I'm moderating this.
Right.
Just pipe in.
So what did she say?
So we were in the Q&A. We had talked about perception and reality and tokenism. And I talk about the need to feel like you constantly have to defend yourself and your identity, and gave an example of a time where I was in the car with my husband and Ahmadinejad, remember him?
Yeah.
Did something stupid. And I was like, oh God. And the worst part of it is I'm going to have to defend this dude and in some way. And then my husband was like, what do you mean? You're not going to have to. And I was like, why is this aggressive right now? Right. And I wanted to highlight that, like, that kind of rapport exists even in my relationship.
Right, of course.
And white lady at the end pipes in with, and how are we supposed to change perceptions if we're not educating each other? You won't even have this conversation with your husband.
Is she, like, a marriage counselor?
Maybe that's it. Maybe she wanted to give me her card.
She's offering you marriage advice now?
Are you covered under Blue Shield, lady?
She's like dictating how you should interact with your husband?
Oh, yeah.
It's fucked up.
My white husband, no less.
Right.
She's going to tell me, like, the person of color, how to, like, educate my man.
Oh, my gosh. So what did you say?
Well, I killed her. She's dead now. And we should probably move on. no. Okay. Of course, I said, what a good question. Ugh, I can't believe I did that.
No, it's good. It's good that you did.
Really?
Yeah, because I would never do that.
Damn it. I did. I said, oh, what a good question. Clap, 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 clap. And then what I said was, you know, for me, my opinions, this is my opinion. My opinions are facts.
Right.
I don't think that the educating should come from me.
Right.
And also, I choose my spaces to educate. And if I don't do that, I'm doing it all of the time, like in my marriage where I, you know, no.
Right. I mean, that's honestly, for people who read my Why Don't Date White Men article, that is why I choose not to date white men, because I don't want to have to educate in my personal life. If there is a white man out there that doesn't need any education, I will be open to it. But.
Oh, God. Taz, do you know what you've just done? You just opened up the opportunity for a bunch of white dudes to be like, I don't need any educating.
They all will. They all will.
Oh, man.
They all will. This is going to be a series of terrible first dates with white men. So my awkward Ask a Muslim is also kind of similar. I was facilitating a Q&A also. I had this amazing panel that I put together at the Advancing Justice Conference. It was Electoral Strategies in Islamophobic Time. And I've been using this panel for a while. I've been using this theme for a panel for a while. But the panelists on this particular panel, I didn't realize it until the night before. There were four hijabi women. And I was really proud of that because we're finally in this world where we have hijabi women, Muslim women, at the forefront of doing electoral work in our community. And everyone did a presentation of all the organizing that they do with their respective organizations. And then after the presentation happened, it was like really great. Like, we had a great few Q&A, and then finally there's an older Chinese woman sitting in the front who had a question. She raised up her hand, and she said, but there's all this terrorism happening, and I want to know what Muslims are doing to strategize around pushing for peace.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I, inside, started fuming, because it was like she sat through a 90-minute panel of all these amazing Muslim women figuring out ways to get the Muslim community civically engaged. Yet, despite all that, all she could think about was the terror happening in the world by just a handful of Muslims. And why weren't there enough Muslims in America apologizing for it? So I did not congratulate her on her question. And I said, who wants to take this question?
Nice.
And the panelists answered it very well. I think what was interesting for me in this experience was that this was an older Asian woman, right? She was an older Chinese woman with an accent. And I kept thinking about, like, the kinds of questions that she was asking. My mom probably would have asked the same question for a different community because age-wise and immigrant-wise and whatnot. Anyway, so the panelists, they kind of answered really respectfully. And I was like, oh, that's I should learn how to be more respectful in this. Like, oh, I need to figure out how to respect people and they're asking the questions while educating them at the same time on how it was a terrible question.
Well, that's why it's an awkward ask a Muslim, right?
Right.
Because it's like the environment requires me to answer your question in such a way that is nice, but I wouldn't normally.
Right.
So fuck you. Speaking of fuck yous, fatwa. Okay, guess what though?
Huh.
I was on Interfaith Voices on NPR.
Yeah.
Which you can also stream. And I got a Roman Catholic nun to issue a fatwa.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You should check it out.
So what's your fatwa?
Bullying in school.
Why is this happening? There's been so many cases of this.
Of course it's happening, because have you heard our presidential candidates?
Well, yeah, that's true. So there's two cases that have been happening, two that are kind of in the news. One was the case of the 12-year-old in Texas, right? And it was his teacher that bullied him.
The teacher
said he was a terrorist.
He was going to grow up to be a terrorist.
It's so terrible. And Empower has a campaign about that. So go to Empower's site, sign the petition. There's a campaign going on there. And then there was another one that happened, I think, in New York.
There was. That would have absolutely wrecked me, by the way, if my teacher had said something like that to me when I was a kid. I mean, this kid was like, what, 10 years old?
Yeah, you get microaggressions really young.
And I would have been destroyed by that.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this because I can't remember. I feel like I must have had really racist teacher experiences growing up, but I must have, like, I don't remember them. I don't think my parents were in any place to be educated enough to know how to deal with that at the time, because they were just immigrants. And for them, when they were raising me, it was always like, just be quiet. Mm. Just follow along. Don't rock the boat. You know, just be good. And we're just going to try to, like, get by here, which was kind of how I was raised. But I don't think the climate's the same now.
It's not enough to be a good Muslim anymore.
No.
Just being brown, that's it.
That's it.
Right? Even if you're not Muslim, which totally. Is what we're finding out, right, more and more these days. So two Muslim teens say their New York school has ignored about bullying for years, and now they may be expelled for fighting back. I'm quoting Raw story here. This exact same situation happened to my brother pre-9/11.
Oh, my gosh.
Where he was being bullied constantly for months by this kid. The yard duty never did a thing. And then finally, of course, my brother defends himself, loses it with this kid. This kid is, like, pushing him. My brother pushes him down. So, of course, my brother's the one on top of the kid when the yard duty comes by. And they want to suspend my brother.
Oh, my gosh.
This is, like,
terrible.
Third grade. And my parents went and talked to the principal, and I feel like now, that was pre-9/11.
Right.
Now, I can't even imagine the fallout.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it's like being a child growing up. So, who's your fatwa against?
So, my fatwa is against bullying Muslim kids. I'm fatwaing that.
Like, anyone?
Anyone. I'm
on it. Teachers, mean people.
Dude, if I could Miss Marvel that shit. I get so angry when I hear about even just, like, teachers who say they're going to hold a healthy debate about violence in Islam.
I think this would be a great plot for a coming-of-age Muslim movie.
Where it starts with me murdering a teacher? That would probably be problematic.
No. I was thinking... my fatwa is against men who...
Let's stop there. My fatwa is against men. Great job. No, please go on.
My fatwa is against men that need women to get Brazilians before they do anything with them.
Now, I'm a fan of the Brazilian, as you know.
Right.
But you said the word need in there.
Need, yes.
I don't know. Hashtag free bush on that.
If it's her choice.
Taz, I feel like you're speaking from experience.
I'm just saying that we need to fatwa all men that need women to get Brazilians. It's a choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, get a Brazilian if you want to have lots of orgasms.
All right, so as we close out the show, Zara, what do you have coming up?
I'll be performing at Stanford. I'll be doing stand-up comedy, and I'll also be performing in wine country.
Sonoma.
And you can see all the details on my Facebook. Also, my Snap Judgment is out. Hijab and Hammer Pants on Snap Judgment. Check it out, snapjudgment.org. How about you, Taz? What you got going on?
Well, actually, it was just published in this book called Coral Serpent, which has 160 LA poets in it. So you can go check that out on Amazon. I also have my own poetry book that just came out, M-Dash and Ellipses. I will be performing poetry at the Pasadena Playhouse on April 19th. I will be having some of my art displayed in this art show in LA that a firm is putting together around trafficked women. It's an earring art display, so I'm really excited about that. Check that out. I'll have everything up on my Twitter. And that's it. Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nourmash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zara at Zara Comedy. That's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarah-Smith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim.
Oh my God, this reminds me of a really bad joke that I grew up with. There's this joke about how this man and woman didn't know how to have sex, so they went into the doctor, and the doctor, instead of saying, you know, you put a penis in the vagina, he was like, you put the longest extremity that you have into the hairiest part on her body.
Oh, no.
And then they went back to the doctor, and they're like, we've been doing this, and we're trying to have a baby, and it's not happening. And they're like, well, the doctor was like, what are you doing? He's like, I keep putting my nose into her armpit, and that's not, I don't know why the baby's not happening.
That is amazing. Welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.